This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You're listening to Score Evenings, weeknights 6 to 9.
Here's the pitch. And a high fly ball hit to deep right center field. Crow Armstrong racing over and makes a sliding catch right along the edge of the track, just to the left of the 368 marker. What a play by PCA. Two away.
Well, you know, the whole idea of this ball is in the gap. This is extra bases. Probably a triple for Lee because he runs well. And this ball just keeps hanging in the air because it's pretty well struck. And I'm telling you, Pete Crow Armstrong just outruns this baseball in the gap, catches it, goes into a slide on the track, and just another great play by Pete in center field. He just really outran the baseball.
Zach Damon and Ron Coomer with the call. Just another great play by Pete Crow Armstrong. They're pretty easy to find in our system because they're all over the place, defensively, on the base paths, with the bat. Pete Crow Armstrong has been excellent. He had it was a wind-aided RBI double today, so he had the RBI today in a Cubs 3-1 loss to the Giants. And I saw yesterday that John Greenberg of The Athletic is writing a piece about Pete Crow Armstrong, and it says Pete Crow Armstrong becoming a folk hero in Chicago. Without further ado, we go back to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline, and from The Athletic, it is John Greenberg. He is, to be specific, the founding editor and senior columnist for The Athletic. What's going on, Greenberg? How are you?
I'm good, man. I was actually just taking a nap, and I woke up dreaming about being on the show.
Did you have any revelations during your dream? Did anything pop up?
It was like meditation, just kind of like getting in the zone of, you know, just to be on the show.
I got
Emma on earlier. I heard it. Wasn't Emma on earlier?
Maybe. You weren't just dreaming, man. Yeah.
We on the list.
We put the kid on the radio, man. He had a hot take about the Cubs. The only thing I have the problem with here about Pete Crow Armstrong becoming a folk hero in Chicago is right off the top of my head, Ryan Terrio was a folk hero. Mike Fontenot was a folk hero. Kosuke Fukudome was a folk hero.
Are we sure?
Yeah, but like, I think folk hero, I feel like that's something that doesn't last. Is there lasting power with PCA?
Yeah, I think you can be a folk hero who kind of lasts. I think in the 80s there was a lot of Cubs folk heroes, right?
Yeah, I suppose there were. Yeah, yeah.
I feel like the 80s was the time of real Cubs folk hero-dom.
So when you say like who? Like Leon Durham and Keith Moreland and guys like that? You're talking about pre-84.
Dunston?
Oh, yeah.
Dunston,
yeah.
Maybe?
Andre Dawson? Yeah, you know what? Dunston is a good
one. Grace in some ways was kind of like a folk hero.
Yeah, but he was a star, right?
He was a star, yeah. I mean, Pete could be a star. I mean, I think we're still a little early in stardom for him, but,
yeah,
you know, he's obviously played like a star the first, like, you know, the last like 3 weeks or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way people have kind of taken to him in Chicago, I think that's kind of what makes it, you know what I mean? The fact that every time he gets up or every time he does anything, they start chanting his initials at him. You know, I wrote in the column, last week I was walking to my car after the game and, you know, there was fans chanting for him by the parking lot and he stopped over and like, it was around 9:30, 10 and started signing autographs. He's just, you know, he kind of acknowledges the fans and he talks to them a lot in the outfield. He's just really, you know, has taken to this, you know, really taken to the team. And a lot of guys, everyone says they love Wrigley, they love this, but they kind of just, you know, I see these guys, you've seen it, you know, you see these guys walk to and from their car and they kind of have to like tune people out.
Yes.
And he is not in the stage yet where he's tuning people out. Mm-hmm. He even said like, he's like, I got out of my car and people are on the rooftops, you know, yelling for me and he's yelling back at them. You know, he's in that kind of mode right now. And I think with his personality, that'll probably stick around to some degree.
I think you're right. And because his personality, like the Cubs don't really have a guy like that. Maybe Shota, but like in terms of everyday players, the personalities on the Cubs are all kind of the same. Like Horner, Happ, Swanson, Tucker, Bush, Amaya, not bad personalities. They're just boring. They're boring.
It's a boring team. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a boring team. I mean, to be honest, and we've, you know, the reporters, we all talk about that, is that, you know, Pete's a guy, when you talk to him, he lights up a little bit. You know, it's not just like everyone's very polite. You know, it's a very polite clubhouse. And, you know, you have these kind of perfunctory conversations with guys. Now, someone like Nico Horner has a little personality. Once you kind of get it going, you know, you get it out of him a little bit. And he's comfortable. He's good with that. And I think I've even heard Swanson is with some guys. Once you really kind of get him going. I know Jameson Taillon is a great personality.
Yes, yes.
You know, he's very fun and he's like very engaging. But yeah, I think Pete's just a different cat. You know, he is just a different kind of personality. And we've been waiting for a guy like this. You know, really, like we haven't had a guy with this kind of personality since Rizzo.
Mm.
And it took Rizzo a few years to kind of get to that level. He wasn't like that at first. And yeah, Pete's just, he's his own guy. And I like what he said, that Willie Harris kind of told him to be himself last year.
Mm-hmm.
Willie was, you know, had a lot of personality. And I think Willie kind of brought that out of him a little bit, just to like, you know, don't be afraid to kind of be yourself and be engaging. And I don't think it really took much prodding for PCA.
And you asked him a question that he had not been asked before, apparently, and I'm quoting you here now, John. You said, I've been quoting people that I've been talking to all night. I had Carmi V on. I was throwing her Twitter right back in her face. I asked Crow Armstrong, you write, if this was all starting to feel real. And here was Pete Crow Armstrong's answer to you, John Greenberg. Quote, a lot of people bring up like the chance and whatnot, but nobody's actually asked if it's really hit me yet, he said. No, I don't think it's really sunk in yet. I think it still kind of makes me slightly embarrassed in a good way, where I'm kind of bashful about it. They're chanting my name so much out there, I want to be like, guys, I got to focus on the game. Close quote. But you know he loves every second of that, right, John?
Yeah, I think he is just kind of like, you know, you don't want to be that rookie or the second-year player or whatever that's like getting all the attention, because then that doesn't always go well. But I think the guys and the team really do love it, and all the chants and things like that. Like, Kyle Tucker's not jealous of that. Kyle Tucker, like, barely, I don't think he wants to speak.
Right.
Like, you know, Kyle Tucker guys don't really have much of a relationship with him yet, because he's never in the clubhouse. And when you do talk to him, he's not, like, you know, the most engaging speaker ever. At least with us. I think he's pretty good with the guys.
Sure.
But, you know, but I think Pete, I think these guys probably love it that Pete's getting this attention, because he's taking it from, you know, they don't want to talk, so it's good, you know? So, yeah, but it is interesting, though. That is why I always like to ask guys, like, what it's like and how they feel when it's, you know, you start getting that attention from fans. And listen, there's nowhere, you know, I don't know if there's anywhere else in sports where you're closer to the fans than at Wrigley Field,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just, yeah, in the NBA, you've got fans literally sitting next to you. But that's like kind of a I don't know if they really, you would really consider a lot of those people the real fans. Those are just wealthy people that can, like, you know, that can sit there.
Yeah.
And but at Wrigley, like he said, the bleachers are so close. He listens to conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you walk to your car and fans are right there. And if you live in the neighborhood, or you know what I mean, you're just like, you're really close to the fans at Wrigley, and that's what makes Wrigley so special. People talk about what makes Wrigley special, and you know, the people kind of like criticize Wrigley for like the drinking and just the kind of idea that it's just like, you know, young, dumb fans who just want to get drunk. But really, it's not true. Like, Wrigley is just a great, they have a large percentage of just really great diehard baseball fans. And they're so close to the action. That's what really makes Wrigley the special ballpark.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, he's so far, he is just perfect for it. I want to take a really quick departure. I have more PCA questions.
Sure.
But since you brought up Kyle Tucker and the fact that, you know, we know he's very quiet. We could all see then. You said he's not in the clubhouse a whole lot, not exactly establishing, you know, relationships and things like that just because he doesn't have that personality type. Do you think that that hurts his chances of wanting to be in Chicago? Not that he came from a small market in Houston or anything, but the shine is much brighter in Wrigleyville than it is Houston.
I don't think it's a big difference.
Okay.
Because I think people are kind of like, you got to understand too, like, we're not it's not the toughest beat anymore.
Right.
And no offense to anyone on it. There's a lot of good people on it and good writers, but like,
did you hear PCA? PCA actually said you guys are easy. He said that the other day.
Do you remember that's what, because you were on the beat at this point, where like that was, Lester told us that was a selling point Theo gave to me, because like compared to Boston, these guys are, you know, it's easy here, which is like kind of an insult.
Right, kind of.
But it's also like they were a little nuts in Boston. Like they had, you know, gossip columns and things like that where that dealt with sports and like, it was just like a different animal, but it's like, listen, it's easy. It's, you're on the only beat that's, I'd say, even a little bit tough, and that's not even that tough anymore. It's just a lot of questions.
It's hard, man. It's harder these days. You know, you understand it. You know why. I mean, it's like the teams are watching more closely than ever in terms of
less access.
Yeah, less access and pulling credentials and things like that. I actually remember, what's that?
Oh, nothing. Keep going.
I remember, and to your point about John Lester, I guess I did not know that that was, or remember that that was the selling point, or one of the selling points for Theo Epstein to John Lester, but I do remember vividly walking into Fenway Park, I guess it was probably 2015, the Cubs were, 2015 or 16, walking in, we walked across the field, so I'm just kind of following all the players as we're all getting off the team bus and all of that, and I literally hear John Lester talking to some of the players that were, you know, with him that had not played at Fenway and talked about, he literally said, this place is a different animal. This town is a different animal than Chicago. So he straight up said what you're saying.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't know. I will say this, you know, cause I got here in full time, at least in 2003, and I started freelancing. And I remember like 3, 4, and 5, you could not get a question in pregame at Wrigley. It was so tough because you had the Sun-Times, you know, you had that Mike Kiley who's fighting with Sully, and you had Bruce. Bruce is the king of, you know, well, the papers say, you know, you're soft, but I know, you know, like there was that kind of stuff. Like kind of everyone for themselves, and it was like, I just remember trying to get questions into Dusty, and it was like intense, and it's obviously a lot less, there's still very good reporters and a lot of people asking, I think, maybe smarter questions these days.
Yeah, that's a good call.
But it's like, but it's not like the intensity, and the intensity then was different too, because it was basically just everyone asking, finding ways to ask Dusty how he's, like, you know, why these guys are hurt, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, remember that was just like a little more, and the White Sox beat was tough, you know, because you had Ozzy, and it was, and, you know, people like Cowley.
Yeah.
It was just like, it was just a different animal. And I always tell people the only beat that's really like tough to get a question in still was the Bears.
No doubt. Yeah.
It's like, I mean, you're great at it, you and Emma. I'm just sitting there. I can't get a question in. You and Emma are, you know, rapid fire with your good. You guys have good. You two have good press conference voices.
Wow, thank you.
I don't have a good press conference like voice. I mean, I get them in occasionally, but I'm just not. I don't have that dominant. You know, I get dominated. You know,
right.
I'm like Larry Mayer. It's like me and Larry Mayer are getting dominated by Emma.
Yeah, man, it's so funny. Like on the Bears beat, I don't win them all, John. Trust me. And like it's like we all sort of do the recap after. Well, man, Emma lost today. Grody got beat pretty bad.
Some people like Chris Emma.
Right, right. So
I love it. That's like the best. And we really the best is that we really we catalog it in the transcripts we do.
Oh, do you? I'm not a part of those.
Oh yeah, yeah. So it always gets cataloged, like who won the face off.
Oh yeah. Yeah, man, it's too bad. You know, Potash, he's not in there anymore. You know, Cronin, she wins her fair share of the battles in there. Even your guys, man, Fishbane jumps in there. He could be pretty strong too.
Yeah, Fishbane can get him in there, but
yeah.
There's some real strong candidates. Like we say, Emma is just can't beat Emma in a face off. I mean, he's like Jonathan Taze in the circle.
Oh man, he's gonna love hearing that. Back to PCA. I love it's amazing that he's hitting all these home runs. And he even said to you, and he said something similar previously, that he doesn't really know who he is as an offensive player. He said to you, "I'm surprised at the homers. I'm also surprised I got 30 punchies already." Those would be strikeouts. So, like, you know, that's frustrating. I'm just proud of myself that I've helped impact the team and all that kind of stuff. But the home runs, man, I still have no idea who this guy is as a hitter. As a baseball guy, do you have any idea? Because PCA still doesn't know. Nobody really knows.
No, I did not think he was going to be this kind of hitter, this kind of power. You know, I thought he was going to be and we're seeing, you know, you can see him like the slump's starting to come, or, you know that they're going to come a little bit. Because just, you know, I wrote that column history and then I had to kind of go back into it after my editor edited it before publishing, because then he struck out, you know, the 10th. And I didn't make a huge deal out of that, even though it wasn't like the best at bat there. But, you know, that point spoke to something Council said before the game about Pete, is that failure is the best teacher, the best coach. And, you know, I remember when he first came up to the end of 2023, and he was kind of like a disaster out there. Like, you could tell he had speed and enthusiasm, but he was not a good base runner. And he said that was right when Andy Green and Mike Napoli started talking to him about it and, you know, how to be a base runner. And then I think last year that those lessons kind of sunk in a little more. And this year you're seeing that he's, you know, playing a little smarter. Like I said, yesterday's strikeout was obviously not great.
Right.
They couldn't get a guy. I saw a lot of people were like, why didn't he bunt? Because the infield was in. I mean, they're not, mm-hmm. not a stupid team. Like, of course the infield's going to be in with a guy on third and one out. Like, what are these people looking at? But, like, still, you know, you want maybe a little more controlled swing there just to try to get the guy in. But that's it, man. Failure is the best, you know, like you said, the best teacher. You got to have to kind of go through those things. And hopefully, you know, he learns from that. I don't think anyone expected, Ryan Pressly to give up 7 runs before getting an out.
Yeah.
I think that kind of magnified Pete's failure there to drive in a run, because all of a sudden it's a crazy end of the game. But, yeah, I don't know what kind of player he's going to be either. And I think that's what's kind of fun. And, you know, you got to make sure you give him – you know, he's given the opportunity, but I think a manager like Council is perfect for him, because he expects a lot from him. You know, Council's kind of no nonsense, but in the same sense, you know, Craig's not that far off from his playing career, really.
Right.
In that, and he loves this kid's enthusiasm. He had a good line, I think, and I think Elise used this in her report, because she got him right after I did. Like, the night before that, he dove, and like the ball, he wasn't even close. He just kind of dove for a ball that he had no business catching anyway. And I guess he told Council after that was his inner golden retriever. and Council goes, I told him, he goes, Council goes, I told him that's a good line.
He's come a long way with PCA because I think he had to, I think he really had to coach him last year. And obviously he was sent down. He wasn't able to hit the fastball. And you know, some of the bling stuff, I think, rubbed people the wrong way. But now, man, what he's doing, and he's popular. Popularity at Wrigley Field is power. And I think Council knows that.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I remember I did in 2023, I did a 20th anniversary of the 2003 team. And I talked to Pryor for a long time. I had a really nice conversation with him. And that's one thing he said, he really regrets not enjoying what it was like to be like young and like a young superstar in Chicago. Cause he was so professional and he was too intense mm-hmm. of a guy. And he recognizes that now, that he should have enjoyed it more because it was just like an amazing feeling. I feel like in that team, the guys who really enjoyed it were like the veterans. They were the ones who really enjoyed it. The people like Sean Estes and Eric Karros.
Oh, man. Karros with his video camera. Yeah.
Right. Karros, I had a great talk with him about that. He likes to say he's the person that started the trend of Cubs players actually living in Wrigleyville.
Oh, okay.
Because he rented a big house there. He said he spent like a fortune on it, rented the house, and guys would come over. And then he noticed more and more guys started living in the neighborhood.
Don't forget about the Grace estate, the Mark Grace estate. Did he live in the Ville?
True.
I think he lived in the Ville,
he did,
too.
Yes. He lived there, too.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah.
But, you know, Karros is just trying to give himself a little love there. I remember most of the guys living in, like, Lincoln Park in Old Town when I lived there.
Yeah.
When I lived in that neighborhood. Because I would see guys a lot, like, you know, at White Sox and Cubs players in that area. But, yeah, so, I mean, I hope Pete's enjoying it. I really do.
Yeah.
I hope he's enjoying, like, kind of being young and just famous and, you know, the team's winning. He and I talked about the most, like, if they're not winning, it's not like he's not this, you know, people aren't chanting and stuff.
Right.
You got to win. Like, the Cubs fans, more than, yes, they've starved for this kind of personality guy. They've been starved for it. But really what we've been starved for is a winning Cubs team, because since the end of 18, when they blew it at the end of 2018, it's been just a series of downers for the Cubs. Just downer after downer.
Yeah.
You know, they blow it in the end of 2018, lose that wild card game.
Mm-hmm.
2019, they fade, don't make the playoffs, they fire Joe. You know, 2020, whatever. 2021, they trade the core. And then since then, it's been just downer after downer. And
right.
All it is people can – you know what's great about PCA's like little run right here, along with Kyle Tucker? But if it's just Tucker, all people are doing is pay Tucker, extend Tucker, you know, and kind of like almost everyone's like ready to be mad.
<You know? laughs> It's a good way to put it. That's a good way
because people are complaining about him not, oh, why haven't they signed him yet? Well, he doesn't want to sign an extension yet. His agents would be like, you know, they want to go, he wants to be a free agent, and they want him to be a free agent. So, like, Rick isn't doing anything wrong yet, but people, you know, they see the writing on the wall, and they know it's, like, what's going to happen. So everyone is proactively being angry.
I love it. John, I got to go. Great stuff, man. I appreciate the article.
All right. I'll see you at the Barrett Sports Media Conference. It's your big panel.
No, I was saying, like, somebody asked me, am I speaking at it? I was like, no, but I would imagine that if somebody can't do their speech, I'm the ultimate fill-in guy, right? So
yeah,
I'm just waiting for the call, you know what I mean? I'll be the fill-in speaker.
They actually want you to do a panel from 7 to 9. No one's going to be there.
Yeah, can you do the 7? We had a guy, but he called in sick. Grody, can you do it? I'll be like, yeah, I'll be there. No problem. I got it. You know me. I'll see you, man. I'm so late. I got to go.
Bye.
Bye. That is John Greenberg of The Athletic. Yeah, hey, man. Yeah, Ben Zobrist, I'll take it. That's such a great point, too, about Mark Pryor. I'm not going to go back in the time machine here, but I covered a lot of Mark Pryor's career, and yeah, man, he was, I don't know if salty is the right word, he just didn't seem to want any of it. The Wrigleyville-ness, the Wrigley Field-ness, the Chicago-ness, all of that, he didn't want to be part of that, and I'm glad to hear that he may regret it just a little bit, because that is a sad, sad story, the Mark Pryor story with the Chicago Cubs, except for 2003 when he was, what, 18 and 6 with a 2-something ERA. Be listening tomorrow morning during Mully and Haw for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Cubs versus Marlins at Wrigley Field. next Tuesday night, May 13th, provided by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch. Coming up next, more Bears on The Score.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. factormeals.com/listen50, code LISTEN50.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Score Evenings, weeknight 6 till 9.
With me, Mark Grody. Just for a short while longer, I'm here until 9 o'clock on The Score. I'll actually be back tomorrow morning. The fast turnaround, like the Cubs just did. I will be back on tomorrow on the Rahimi and Harris show. I will be filling in for Layla Rahimi, so I'll be working with Marshall Harris.
Hey,
On the score midday show of Rahimi and Harris, starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow until 2 o'clock. So looking forward to working with Marshall tomorrow. Also coming up here in just a little bit, we're going to get to know my partner on the Take the North Bears podcast a little bit better, Dan Weider, in just a bit. I want to talk a little bit more about Jalen Johnson and his visit with Fox Sports 1's Speak podcast, which is very entertaining, and they were kind of grilling Jalen Johnson about some of his lofty expectations for him personally for this year. You got to do that, though. I remember, was it Eddie Jackson would always say that he would get up there for at least 2 years in a row. He got up there and said, I am going to be the greatest safety in the league this year. That's what's going to, and this is his last 2 years where things were starting to go downhill.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of those years, 2018, he actually was.
Yeah, he was. I don't know that he said it then. I mean, like the Eddie Jackson thing, it happened. It started to happen in 2017. Like, oh man, this guy's a leader. This guy's good. And then he was unbelievable. Like so many of those elite defenders for the Bears in 2018. And then it never really quite came back with Eddie Jackson. He got the money that he deserved, I thought, just because it felt like he was going to put together. I mean, he had a good Bears career, but it just never quite lived up to what I thought it was ultimately going to be.
And unfortunately, the 1 year he was starting to rebound a little bit, it was 2023, his last year, he actually was having a good season, and then he got hurt.
Yeah, right. So right. He
had a little bit of a, he was having a really good bounce back season.
He was getting interceptions again, right? Because I think the year before, did he have zero or something? Like there was a, maybe two?
It was 2022 was Eberflus's first year.
That he had the good stuff, right?
Yeah, because I remember he had like a great interception against like the Giants where he chased it down and caught it overhead like a receiver. Like he had a really good pick against, I think he might have had the pick that sealed the game against the 49ers the first game that season.
Yeah.
And then he had a really good pick against Dak Prescott against the Cowboys. I don't know how I remember all this. But this
is what we do.
Yeah. So anyway, but you're right, though. You're right. He did overall fizzle out.
Yeah, fizzled out. But I think again, history will look fondly upon, if for nothing else, but for the 2018 season. And you know, look, he was never a bad player for the Bears. But anyway, we're talking about 2025 here and Jalen Johnson. And a really good question that was asked, because I wonder about this too, as I try to, you know, be a little conservative with immediate expectations with the Bears under Ben Johnson, despite what looks like, you know, obviously they did fill in a lot of holes on the offensive line or the defensive line. And you think that Caleb Williams is going to take that next step. But guess what? With all of that comes pressure. There's going to be pressure on Ben Johnson. There's going to be pressure on Caleb Williams. There is going to be a lot of pressure on Jalen Johnson to win this year. Here's Jalen on that notion.
There's a lot of pressure, and I think there's nothing wrong with pressure. At the end of the day, I feel like him being number one pick, Ben Johnson being the number one head coach sought after. I mean, to me, it got to be some pressure when you're dealing with high-level guys. So, I mean, if it wasn't no pressure, everybody's like, okay, whatever you got to do. I mean, to me, that speaks volumes to what people think of you. So, I mean, just for them coming into it, especially Caleb being the number one pick, Heisman winner, I mean, there is going to be pressure because everybody believes and know and have seen him play the game at a high level. And then Ben Johnson, he's been doing it for years. I can say it's been tough going against Detroit, whether that was them winning 3 games, 8 games, or 15 games. I mean, I feel like they've always done pretty good things, especially on the offensive side of the ball. So, I mean, there is going to be high expectations. I mean, sure, we got high expectations in the building. So, I mean, to me, it's only right for everybody else to have high expectations as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Embrace it. There is more pressure on Caleb Williams than there is on Ben Johnson, for sure. I mean, this is the number one overall prospect. You don't even want to start. Like, I don't want to see a slow start for Caleb, man. Like, in the first 5 or 6 games, if things start to go south for Caleb Williams, I mean, there is going to be panic in the city, panic at the disco, panic everywhere. So I think there's heavy-duty pressure on him. For whom do you think, Studs, there's more pressure, Ben Johnson or Caleb Williams?
Ooh.
I think it's Caleb. I think there's a ton of – because I don't – like many coaches that have come into this town, whether Ben Johnson succeeds or not, he doesn't know what's about to hit him in terms of the pressure to win in this city, the media in this city, the fans in this city. It's pretty immense, and probably, I mean, there are probably about 5 or 6 cities you could say the same about, but the Bears are definitely one of them.
I would say Caleb. Just because so much has been put on him since he was drafted by the Bears that he's supposed to be the savior, right? And, you know, Heisman Trophy winner. Everyone knew for 2 years, basically, he's going to be the number one overall pick. This highly touted, highly graded prospect, talked about as the best prospect by some since Andrew Luck,
mm-hmm.
Trevor Lawrence level of prospect right. coming out of college. So I think it would be Caleb, but it's Ben Johnson isn't far behind. Because he's been kind of anointed as the next guy.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been, I'm trying to think in my head, there's never been a coach that has been this heralded on his way in. Never. Not even close, now that I think about it. Like, people are thinking, oh, Grody, what about Ditka? No, Mike Ditka was, I mean.
What about Wani? I know Wani was really sought after, right?
Yeah, I guess he's the last guy that was, where the Bears got the guy, because Dave Wannstedt was the hot coordinator, defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys at that time, a team that was winning titles. So that was, but it wasn't at the same level, because Wani, defensive guy, And things have changed. Obviously, that was more valued back then. Ben Johnson feels like a different animal. But that's a good call, for sure. I mean, Dave Wannstedt chose the Bears over the New York Giants. I mean, he had offers. They got the guy. So that's a good call by you, Studs. Expectations. So, since we were just talking about Caleb Williams, here's Jalen Johnson on expectations for Caleb Williams in winning football.
I think, honestly, just to sum it up, I think fair expectations for him to play winning football. And I feel like for him to play winning football, of course, it goes into the unit, the team, the coaching, the position, the scheme, things like that goes into him playing winning football. I don't think it has to be him going for 4,000 yards or 4,500 yards and then we don't go to the playoffs. I think it's more so just making the right plays. If it's a check down, if it's completing the deep ball, whatever it may be, I think just him playing winning football, and then that comes with the defense too. I mean, me being the leader, being that dog on the defensive side, we got to give him the ball back, get him as many opportunities for him to play winning football. Like, it's hard when we getting offenses going down on us, scoring on us, and they have to play aggressive football and the run game not there because they got to pass. We giving up too many points and too many yards and things like that. So, I mean, just as a complete unit, top to bottom, I think the GM and the front office, I think they did their job of bringing in the right guys. But now I feel like it's time for Ben to lead us, and then all the leaders set that tone in the locker room and then on the field to be able to set everybody up, especially him, to be able to play winning football.
It doesn't have to be 4,000 yards, but it kind of does. It sure would be nice. It really would be nice if it was 4,000 yards for Caleb Williams this year. Great stuff.
And do it before game 17, because the joke is the Bears actually never had a 4,000-yard passer in a 16-game season.
Right.
So if he could do 4,000 yards in the first 16 games, that'd be great.
Yeah.
No, not a big deal, but it would be that way we could at least say, you know, hey, a Bears quarterback did do this in 16 games.
Right.
17-game season, but he had it after 16.
We don't want any asterisks. I can't even say the word.
Same
right
with
now.
30 touchdown passes. Hit 30 by game 16. No pressure. It's really not that much.
Do it. Do it, man. Come on. We do not want a quarterback manager. We want 4,000 yards from you, Caleb Williams. It must be that. We must take a break. We're going to talk about our Bears podcast, Take the North, that I get to perform with Dan Wiederer. Our eyes have come into question. That's next on The Score.
I thought you were rolling your eyes at me.
No, I don't do that. Usually.
You're listening to Score Evenings, weeknights 6 to 9.
Those eyes, man. The eyes of the fellas from the Take the North podcast have come into question. Yes, they have. You may recall there was a Bears offensive line coach named Juan Castillo, who used to work here. He was here a few years back. I can't keep track of all the exact years and times and moments. But
it was a Nagy guy, right?
He was.
Was that who they hired after they fired Helfrich?
No. It was the guy from Notre Dame that they fired.
Helfrich was the guy. Mark Helfrich.
Mark Helfrich was the offensive coordinator, not the... I'm talking about offensive line
coach. Right,
Heistand. Harry Heistand.
Heistand.
Yeah. Come on, man. No, I'm just kidding.
H's. Too many of all of them.
It's funny, man. Like every single offensive line coach that comes to the Bears are always the greatest offensive line coach ever. Dan Rauschard, the latest. And I really enjoyed talking to Dan, so when we got the opportunity to do it. But this was Juan Castillo when he was here, and we were kind of going back and forth talking, and he apparently took note of my eyes.
You know the right answer because I could see it in your eyes. I mean, that's what you tell me. That's what I see in the eyes. Maybe your blue eyes are lying to me. Yeah.
Juan Castillo was great. He really was. I mean, just a wonderful personality and hilarious, and kind of made you like, what just happened in there?
Well, you also don't have blue eyes, right?
No, I don't. Actually, they're green. But
maybe,
you know,
the right light
and the right light. Yes, that is true. There are times that in the light, I take pride in the green eyes because apparently they are the rarest of the color of the eye. So I do say I've got green eyes.
I have a shade of green eyes.
Oh, do you?
They're hazel, I think, technically, but they're more green than anything.
Okay.
Actually, my mom, dad, and sister all have the same eyes.
That's funny. My mom and I have the exact same eyes. So, and hers do. Actually, hers do. When I see my mom, her eyes do look blue sometimes. But that ain't nothing compared to Dan Wiederer, who also has, his eyes are legit blue, like a brilliant color of blue. But I didn't know this about Dan, and his eyes really being an obstacle for him at times. Here's Dan Wiederer, co-host of the Take the North podcast.
My eyes, right here. Ooh. They're one of my discerning characteristics, and they get me into trouble sometimes. And
some eyes, don't you?
And sometimes when I get tired, they get even worse. And so I've got three little separate stories to share with you, just so you don't misinterpret eyes sometimes. The first one I'm going to tell you about, this is from the professional realm. There was a blogger when I was covering ACC basketball in North Carolina by the name of Shane Ryan. He's now a published author, does a lot of his work covering golf. But he had come to the 2011 ACC tournament. You can still find this blog entry because I just pulled it up so I could read this, because I took a lot of crap for this in the weeks that followed the publishing of this. And he was basically writing about what it's like to cover the ACC tournament from the eyes of somebody that hadn't really done it and was observing how it went. Here's what he wrote about me. And then like, don't get too far ahead of yourself with this here. He said, I had occasion to see Dan Wiederer in action this weekend. I couldn't help but notice an intense, almost maniacal look on his face as he stared at his computer. He wrote in sort of a quiet fury, and you got the sense that a gunfight wouldn't have distracted him from his task. Even if I hadn't known Dan Wiederer from Adam, I would have been struck by that look. It's the rare and unmistakable face of passion. That look isn't why he's great, but it's a product of the fact. I did not know Shane at the time, but that was one of the most embarrassing paragraphs I ever read.
It's completely wrong
because my eye, like Grody, I do this no matter what time of day it is. And
yeah,
like
you do.
Eyes,
do
I'm
that.
Writing and I look, yeah. I look like a maniac. He said maniacal. Look, I had people that called me maniacal eyes for like years on end after that because of the way this went. So
awesome.
Shane saw that as the unmistakable face of passion. A police officer in Prague, Czechoslovakia in the late 90s saw my eyes when I get tired or I'm sleep deprived. I get like my pupils that like things get out of whack in my eyes.
Stoner eyes. Yeah.
I look like kind of nuts. I was traveling by myself in Prague after splitting up from a group in the late 90s, right out of college. And I was stopped on a train in Czechoslovakia because I think they thought I was on drugs. Okay, because my eyes were just tired and I was staring. And then the more that a Czechoslovakian police officer stares at you, the more nervous you get. And you're just looking at them like, oh God, what's going to happen? I don't speak the language. I'm in a foreign country. I have no friends with me. What's going to happen? They went through all my bags, like on the middle of the train, searching for whatever, you know, weapons, drugs, whatever it was. Even made me unscrew the lids to my contact case to make sure there was nothing in there. You talk about a heartbeat and a maniacal look in that moment of like, what's going to happen here? Like, this is pre-cell phone, right? So it's not like you can get in touch with your family and be like, hey, I'm in a Czechoslovakian prison because my eyes were maniacal today. Okay.
Dude.
Also, I guess this would have been the 2010 Final Four in Detroit. No, 2009 Final Four in Detroit. They would not let me into the Caesars in Windsor. I had two beers. We had gone out to dinner with a group, and we were trying to go into Caesars to do a little gambling. I had two beers at dinner, and they would not let me into Caesars because my eyes were apparently out of whack for the bouncer.
Wow.
You should have seen the volume of drunk people stumbling up the stairs and past me. They're like, yeah, go ahead. But not this crazy MF-er. Look at the eyes on this guy.
Oh,
like,
my God.
So sometimes these things can be a blessing that people just think that you are like the hardest worker ever. And sometimes they can get you into a lot of trouble.
That's funny. He does have sort of a maniacal pose when he's writing up there at Hallis Hall, man. I mean, you have to. Look, man, that's a competitive beat. Yeah, he's up there. He's like moved up in his chair, got the Carroll around him. He's got Biggs, you know, off to his right. He's got, you know, Sean Hammond. You got the Sun Times over there. So, yeah, Wiederer, man. But
the not being let into Vegas thing is into Caesars in Vegas is wild.
That's amazing.
The amount of people that you see stumbling into those casinos, and I can't imagine his eyes looked that whacked out.
Well,
there's just no way.
No, you're probably right. He does like it's kind of like it, so like a mix between like a Bobby Portis and Mike Singletary. And even if you're a youngin, like you've seen the NFL films footage of the Mike Singletary eyes.
I don't think Wiederer, been working with Dan for a while, I don't think he's got Mike Singletary level eyes. It's just like, that's a different category.
You don't
want to
compliment him that high, is what you're saying.
It's not that. I'm sorry. Dan doesn't have the same level of eyes as a Hall of Fame linebacker for the 85 Bears. Yes. I'm comfortable saying that. He doesn't have Mike Singletary eyes.
No, he doesn't. Nor does he have a Betty Davis eyes.
I actually knew a guy in high school that has orange eyes. It's crazy.
Really? Wow. Orange eyes?
Yeah. The only person I've ever seen with orange eyes.
They were for real?
Beautiful eyes.
Oh,
beautiful
wow.
eyes.
Gorgeous orange eyes. I don't think that I have ever heard of that. By the way, Dan and I will be recording another episode of the Take the North podcast tomorrow. Is that right, Studs? Studs, by the way, is the
I think so.
The executive producer. We have a lot of moving parts here. I think we're doing tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow afternoon after you're done with the midday show.
Yeah,
we were going to do before. We were going to do 9:30 in the morning tomorrow, but then you're like, oh, wait, I have to host the midday show.
Yes.
So we're like, okay, 2:30 it is.
Yes, I'm with Marshall Harris tomorrow. I'm filling in for Layla Rahimi on the Rahimi and Harris show. So looking forward to talking to everybody at 10 o'clock tomorrow. And the episode that we're going to do tomorrow is a Weederer special because he is going to predict, as only Dan Weederer can, the Bears' schedule. So we'll tell you when that one drops. Thank you to everybody for listening to this show here. Thanks for your text messages as well. Appreciations to Evan Altman, Carmen Vitale, and John Greenberg. Also, our executive producer tonight, Adam Studzinski, putting together a hell of a show like he does. I am Mark Grody, and I will talk to you tomorrow right here on The Score.
Can I finish? Please, can I finish? Okay, I'm finished.